Thought for today, going to the doctor. Going to the doctor. I think that we should all go to the doctor. The doctors would love us. They would find us most exquisite patients. Nothing wrong with us. That's a nice way to go, isn't it? This is Dr. Herbert L. Byerly, Dean of the University of Healing, bringing the thought for today from Campo, California, entitled Going to the Doctor. We have monks at the monastery here. And the monks hear every single day that they're whole and perfect. 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 Every day they hear these words until it gets up to, you know, up to their chin level. They're ready to drown in those words. Nice way to drown. And every day they have some little malady that comes up. They bring it to my attention. Dr. Byerly, I get this, I got that, I got the other thing. I say, great, how wonderful. What would you like to do? Would you like to speak your word and release it and go on with your activities? Or would you like to have an aspirin or a Tylenol or whatever the other things are that are called? You know, whatever. I don't look in the medicine cabinet enough to see it, but would you like that? Would you like to have a massage? Oh, yes, that would be lots of fun. would you like to have maybe some special diet that Ingeborg can come up with from her postal work when she was working with her mother in Italy during the war? They used to come up with all sorts of remedies for the German soldiers who would come into the post office to pick up their mail. It's fascinating how she learned all these things. Actually, Ingeborg really comes from an old family of Germans that go way, 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 way back, and they were called witches, and I mean, they were called wizards. They were called wizards in their day, and they knew all of the folk medicine. They were like the hill people in the United States. They knew all the folk medicine and could bring a... And that's true about Ingeborg. That's true about her. She really likes folk foods. She likes natural foods like the mushrooms, and she likes the weeds of the field, and she can tell you what any weed is for and why it grows and where it's, what it's supposed to do, and what these stickers are supposed to be for, thistles and what have you. I've always thought they were just supposed to be chopped out and thrown away. But she says, no, no, they're good for your diet. So, I tell her that's wonderful. If you want any of that stuff, buy it at the store. But what about going to the doctor? Now, there are many people who go to the doctor as a hypochondriac. They've always got something. If they hear of the latest problem in the magazine, they read about it and they study it, they go to the doctor, "Doctor, I have this." And they know it very well because they've read it and they've just absorbed it. And the doctor says, "My, you are well read." And the doctor says, "I tell you, now, here is the solution to that particular malady. Now, because it is that particular thing, what we have to do is to cut off the right leg and cut off the left leg and switch them. And then we sew them each on the other side so that you will be able to handle this properly, you see. Your stance would be better to be able to handle whatever that is that you're reading about in the magazine." "Oh, no, 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 I can do it a different way." "Oh, no, no, it doesn't hurt. You know, you don't even know anything about your anesthetized while it's happening, you know. And then while it's growing back, it feels kind of funny because there's not the proper places that the things are coming up. They're coming up in the opposite places. But, well, that's okay. But you see, pretty soon the lady goes home and says, "Oh, I've had enough of that. You know, my God, you know, he wanted to cut my legs off and switch them around. And then he said I wouldn't have the gabbledygook anymore, you know. And the magazine says gabbledygook is the newest thing, you know, and I certainly like to keep up on the newest illnesses that are available." But this is how humanity is. Now, I remember when I was a child, back in the 1600s, when I was a child, they didn't have all these fancy names for problems like they have today. They didn't have a lot of fancy problems that we have today, too. People just died because they didn't have the medical ability to take care of some of those things. And I'm not saying it's good or bad. It's just certainly a lot cheaper. But people would have problems, and they'd call it gout. They'd call it all, I don't know what the, remember what the names were, that was quite a few years ago. They have all sorts of different names for them, very, very simple names. One name usually covered about 50 or 60 types of maladies. And then they were just told to eat a little less, or they were told to drink more water, or do all these things. Really quite popular things and quite proper things. And many of the people who did them, believing that the people who told them what to do knew what they were talking about, and they really didn't. They merely saw it function sometimes and not function other times. Well, I saw Mrs. Murphy, and I told her, and she used the water, and the water helped clean her system out. I told Mr. Jones over here, he used the water and he drowned. Well, you know, it all depends. It all depends. Medicine, as a doctor will tell you, is a very hairy thing. It is something you cannot depend upon. Medicine just will not be replicated in a perfect way. If they come up with one cure for cancer, then they come up with another cancer. It's got a little twist to it. And they had penicillin. Oh my, how wonderful penicillin was. And still is for a lot of people. But the bugs are becoming aware of penicillin, and they're building up a resistance to it, and so it doesn't knock them out anymore. And at one time where they thought venereal disease would be stamped out with penicillin, now the venereal diseases have had a call of their union, and they said, now we've got to find new ways to overcome this penicillin. And so they did. They did. They developed new venereal diseases. They developed new diseases that would keep them in business. Now, this sounds like I'm making fun of this and I'm being kind of silly. And in a way I am. But actually, what I'm saying is, if we would spend as much time on being healthy and thinking that we're healthy as we do on thinking that we're ill, we would have a great deal more hours of being healthy. You say, well, that still wouldn't solve the problem. Yes, but you wouldn't be spending all your time in the attitude of illness. You see, there's a lot of people, let's just look at the, they say the hospital is the best place to go to die, because most people die in the hospital. That's what they say. But actually, what they're trying to say is that if a person lives in a harmonious home, and perhaps has a little ache or pain now and then, and just is a master of it, and doesn't let it bother him. And then he lives a happy, hearty life. She lives this considered life of a joyous being with other people, and then she dies. But she dies as a happy person. She doesn't die having all of this medicine put into her. You know, it interests me so. My brother-in-law, he had a heart attack, and they had to have, I think it was a quadruple bypass for him, a lot. And they had to give him all sorts of things and give him a machine in his chest and what have you. And he lived for a couple more years, but how much smoother it would have been for him if he could have just, you know, flipped out at the moment that he was ready to flip out. He stayed around for a few more years, and his body got worse and worse and worse. In fact, the doctors didn't even know he had some of the problems he had. When he died, the doctor said, my God, we didn't know that was all going on in there. And they didn't, because he just sort of, I got the problem there, so I'll just suffer through it. And he didn't look like he was sick. He didn't act like he was sick. He didn't treat himself. He was living a happy life. He was taking care of my sister May, being a very wonderful husband to take care of all of her needs, but nonetheless, he just got worse and worse, and then all of a sudden, his heart couldn't take all of the things that were going on in his body, and went poof, and knocked him out, and he's gone. And it was wonderful. It was really wonderful. It was it would have been nice if he could have gone before, because he was done. What he did between then and now was not quality living. He was really struggling. He was really struggling. And if our quality of life is not good, is not wonderful, what's the big deal? What's the big deal about staying alive another week, another month, another year, another 10 years? If our quality of living is not harmonious. Now, I recommend, and people like to shoot me for this, I'm sure, but I recommend that we spend more of our time learning how to have a better quality of life than we do spending time searching into all of these indignities into our human psyche. We have all of these medical invasions into our body, into our mind, into our spirit, and the doctors are only doing what we're asking them to do. They're not being evil or bad in any way. They're just challenged by trying to keep people alive, trying to keep people happy. Well, you know, Hippocrates, the father of medicine, he was always proclaiming, it's the quality of life, not the life. And that healing takes place within by the patient. The doctor only helps the patient remain alive long enough to heal himself. Now, if the patient isn't going to heal themselves, if they're going to expect the doctor to do the healing, well then, Hippocrates was off on a wrong track there. If the patient is going to say, well, it's going to get worse. You see, the doctor shouldn't lie. But yet the doctor says the apparent truth. It looks like from the appearances that you're going through, you're going to have this experience. And it looks like from past experiences of other people having the same case, that if you continue going downhill as you are, you can expect to live for another week or two, or maybe a month or a year. But it depends, you know. The doctors say, based upon previous experiences. Well now, instead of that, wouldn't a little, quote, lying be a good idea? Wouldn't it be wonderful if the doctors would say to you, well, the doctors know that you're just a mess inside. Well, I think it's a good idea for you to go out and just enjoy yourself and have a good time and do all the things you ever want to do. Just really have a good time. And don't say, because in a week you're going to die. But say, live your life in fullness and beauty. Now, does it help you to know in a week you're going to die? Not really. Does it help you to be a better person, to live a more happy life? Does it help your family to know it? Yes, it's a shock. It's a shock to a family whose member dies and the member looks so good, like my niece, or my cousin, Trudy. She was married and her husband's a very normal fellow and he lived a happy, ordinary life. And they were watching a sporting game on television, and he just went, pop! And they didn't even know he was ill. And he just had a heart attack or something like that. What a wonderful way to go. Now, he's not a nice guy, because he had a few glimmers ahead of time, and maybe a week ahead of time or a month ahead of time, that he wasn't feeling too good. Now, he should have told his wife, I really don't feel too good. I think in a week or a month, I'm going to die. And so, in a week or a month, I'm going to die. And so, you know, why? Why? Why should he tell his wife that? The fact is, he didn't know, but he had a glimmer. He had a vision inside of himself that his life might be short. He had that feeling. We all do. We know when our day is coming. Like May, she wanted to stick around till the first of the year, and she did. You know? She could have left a long time before that and gotten rid of all that pain she's gone through. But no, she wanted to stick around until the first of the year. And that was okay. But she pretty well knew. And we all have an idea. Now, Ellen is the biggest joke of all of us. Ellen says, You know, my daddy lived until he was 90 something or other, right? 91, 7?
No, 87.
87, okay. And my mommy, she lived until she was?
87.
Well, okay, then they're both in their 80s. So you got a few years to go yet. Now, so Ellen says, I'll be living until I'm in my 80s, but you know, I'll probably outlive my parents. Look at her. His parents died when they were in their 60s and 70s, you know. And here he is already marching toward 80, you know. So he'll probably live until 80 or 90 or 100 or whatever, you know. But he doesn't have to die because his parents died. They've already died. He already messed it up by not dying when they died. You know, he already blew the thing, you know. So now that doesn't count anymore. So now he's got a different program he's living by. And he's not telling anybody about it. You know? And that's beautiful. We know we're going to die. We want to die. We feel that's part of life. It's a silly thing to feel, a silly thing to want, but that's just the way it is. So why don't we tell our loved ones when we're going to die? I am going to die on X day at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, just after I've had a nice cup of tea and had a nice chat with my family, you know. And they say, you're going to do that? Well, don't you think you should let us know so we can be in town? Because on that day, we had planned to be on a tour in Africa. And they're going to be off here, and they're going to be off there. And you're just going to have, well, hey, I didn't say I was going to have the family in. I just said I was going to be with my family. Whoever was there. And maybe it's just my grandson, you know. Maybe it's just my daughter. Maybe it's just whoever, I don't know, my family. Whoever is with me. Now, are the rest of you going to feel bad because you're not with me? No. Only if you know it's going to happen and you're not there. But so what? You see, we make such a big deal about this. We make such a big deal about living and dying. There's only one way to live. Ingeborg, how can you define that? What is the only one way to live?
Always being on top.
Whole and perfect. Always being on top. The only way to live is to be whole and perfect, always being on top. Now, somebody comes along and says, how do you feel today? Always on top, always great. You may drag a little bit, you may have a little bit of a feeling like you'd like to sleep longer or something like that, but that's okay. You say, I feel on top. And you say, well, yeah, I want to take a walk this morning. I want to walk around the acreage here and look at the property and smile at the beautiful clouds that are popping up in the sky, is the big white fluffy dogs there, and I want to enjoy that. But I also would like to sit down and just read a book. Well, get out and go. Get out and go. You come back and you'll have so much enthusiasm you won't feel like reading a book, you'll feel like doing some gardening. But you see, when we use our body, when we enjoy our body, when we walk with our body and talk with our body and sing with our body and do all of these things, our body says, hey, I like you. I'm glad you like me. And you know, I'll stick around as long as you enjoy me. But when you give up on me, poof, I'm out of here. And that's the truth. When we give up on our body, it's out of here. And sometimes we get out before our body gets out. Instead of having vegetables in the old folks' home, the rest home, when I was visiting my sister, they had all these bodies that were sitting on wheelchairs with their tongue hanging out, head hanging to one side. They left home a long time ago. It's just the body didn't stop breathing, you know. And you see, we can't take a life. That's not right for us to do. But we should design into our physiological self that when we feel we've had enough or when we feel that it's time for us to go, we just wink our eye twice and that's it, you know. Or you just say, okay, God, you talk to yourself there, I'm ready. And then you say to your family, how do you want this? Do you want me sitting down or standing up? Or do you want me in front of the funeral parlor? Or do you want me, where do you want me? I mean, you know, how do you want to play the game? Well, you know, they should really have big, what do you call them, benches in front of the mortuaries. So people can go there and sit and know that, you know, it's going to be their moment, and they won't have to be hauled very far, you know, to be taken. You say, oh, that is terrible, Herb. No, it isn't. That's really nice. And that's not maudlin. That's not sad. It's just great. Now, I was thinking the other day about a friend. They told me Grandma died, and they were in Texas, and they were on their way back to California. And Grandma was sitting in the back seat, and she died. And they looked back, Grandma, what are you doing? And she was just laying there, you know. And they kind of thought she might have passed on. And so they didn't say another thing between them. They just drove back to California, came to their house, called the doctor. The doctor looked at the Grandma and says, yep, she passed away a while ago. And they said, well, she was sleeping good, we thought. And, you know, that way they didn't have to have her hauled back from Texas to California in some other type of conveyance, and they could be with Grandma in those last moments of her presence, and they could say, Grandma, it's been good to have you, you know. And they just take her right to a mortuary, you know, right to a hospital, right to whatever they want to do, you know, or police department, whatever is the proper thing for them to do. But the police frowned upon that. They don't want you hauling around a dead body in the car. But that's a reasonable thing, that you might die. I quite imagine many people who have healthy attitudes about life and death and about the family and about what have you have found themselves with mama or daddy or a child or somebody who died in their arms, and they drove them to the hospital. They drove. Why don't they stop right there and call an ambulance to take them to the hospital? Well, what difference does it make? What good would it make? They were with them with their love, and they took them to the hospital or to the morgue or whatever it was, and it was all taken care of. But that's beautiful. That's beautiful. You say, my goodness, Herb, this is quite a talk. What are we calling it? Going to the doctor, huh? Going to the doctor. Yes, that's quite a talk. But think about it. You know, when I was on my diet, and I was working at the United Church of Religious Science, my co-workers would say to me, Herb, you're getting thin. You sure you're supposed to be just drinking that water? And I said, my doctor tells me that's the best thing I should do right now. Oh, okay. You know, if your doctor tells you, that's okay. And of course, I was my doctor. But I did just fine. I always do just fine. We always do. And you know, if sometimes you diet improperly and you die, well, that's good. If sometimes you diet properly and you live forever and ever and ever, that's good too. But really, be in charge of yourself. Set your own pattern for life. Don't be afraid of death. Don't be afraid of life. If you don't feel like going for a walk in the morning, get up and go out for a walk. If you don't feel like cleaning your house, get up and clean your house. If you live in a messy house, if you live in a messy world, you're not happy with yourself. Even if you're a messy person, you're not happy with yourself. You know, everybody who's a messy person knows where everything is. So if you don't know where everything is, then you're not really a messy person, you know. And I had lots of editors who worked for my newspapers, and they would have these roll-top desks. And they loved the roll-top desks because they would be doing 100 jobs and you know, so many things during the day. And when the end of the day comes, slam down that roll-top desk and lock it. Nobody goes in there and touches anything because they know where everything is. It's a mess in there, but they know. In the morning, they pull it up and back into business they go. Now, that's their way. That's their way. And you say, that's a mess. Sure, that's their mess. But for me, whenever I can take a mess and sort it through and throw away two-thirds, three-quarters of it, I feel so good. I feel so good. In fact, I even throw away the other quarter. I figure if it's been waiting around that long, it really doesn't deserve to have my attention or my concern. And we were on our trip to Africa, and we were given about 8 or 9 letters that I have to answer, and I still haven't answered them. And the handwriting is so difficult, and the addresses are so insecure, that I just never felt inclined or pushed to do it. But I will. And then I will give Ellen and Sylvia the letters with the addresses and let them double check it and send it out. And it'll be fine. It'll be fine. No big deal. And it's wonderful. But again, going to the doctor, I recommend that each one of us continue with our work here at the university, which you've already done. Get your doctorate and be your own medical doctor, be your own metaphysical doctor, be your own spiritual doctor, be your own doctor of all. And when you are, you'll be the happiest person on earth, because you will not be looking for symptoms. You'll be looking for solutions, and you'll be having them. And you will not be looking for problems that say, I feel terrible, but you'll be looking for smiles that say, ah, nothing, I feel great. I feel great. I was talking to my miracle ear lady, and she was saying, now it's going to tickle when she put the thing in my ear. And I said, no, I have a very high tolerance. Things don't tickle me unless I want them to. And things don't hurt me unless I want them to. People have done things to be very hurtful to me at times, not being bad to me, but you know, it would hurt me. And I just said no, and then I was immune to it. And this is what we should tell ourselves. We are immune to hurts. We are immune to diseases. We're immune to anything. We're immune to all that is unlike our pure, perfect nature. Can you say that about yourself? It's a wonderful thing to start practicing. And it's a wonderful thing to start demonstrating and start experiencing in your life. It's really fantastic. You know, we're going good today. We're almost 28 minutes here, and we're having a ball. So start thinking happy thoughts about yourself. Herb, you talked about death. No, I didn't. I said, if you want to die, die. But don't worry about it. It's no big deal. Life is eternal. You're going to continue expressing on the multi-dimensions that you're on everywhere, and you're having a ball. So don't worry about anything. Just flow with it. Right, Ellen?
Yes.
Yeah. Just flow with it. Have a ball. Enjoy yourself. And remember, you are your doctor. I love you. So, you are your doctor. Is that what I said?
Yeah, that's what I said.
Going to the doctor.